Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pechet Amar Aleph, five lines down. Elas Varehi. The Gemara is trying to establish what exactly is the case in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah uses terminology which implies that the other cases don't have whatever is implied by the terminology. Mishnah uses the terminology of birshut, with permission, with beitin, all these different terminologies. And from that, the Gemara concluded that the first case, or the major case in the Mishnah, must be talking about an instance of eid echad. The case where we have a single aid that comes and testifies to the fact that her husband passed away, and therefore she is muteret to go ahead and marry. Now the Gemara in yesterday's daf entertained that as being a full proof sort of edut, that a single aid could come and testify to the fact that someone has passed away, and we would accept that edut as being full-fledged edut. There is a machloket in the Rishonim yesterday as to whether that is midoraita. Is the Gemara really entertaining that at a Torah level, we're going to believe this eid echad? That seems to be what Rashi says. Tosafot also says something very similar, that the Gemara at this point is entertaining the possibility that an eid echad would be neman midoraita, mina Torah, in this situation, and that we would then allow her to get married based on that, including the acquiescence of Beit Din. I mean, if Beit Din agreed and the Eid Echad was here, that would be sufficient to have Nemanut and have her get married based on that. There are other Rishonim who say that the Gemara never really thought that, because Dover Sheba Erva needs two Eidim. So the Gemara is never really entertaining that one Eid could actually accomplish this, but rather the Gemara is suggesting that Eid Echad's Neman, and that's at a Derabbanan level, we understand that you can't have real Eidut over here. But given what we know about the situation, we're going to allow an Eid Echad to work here, even though it's technically not real Eidut or Eidut Mido, right? Nevertheless, that it works over here. So it's really a Machloket HaRishonim is how to view the Gemara until this point. Gemara brought proofs to the fact that Eid Echad is Neman. In certain situations, we find that an Eid Echad is Neman. But now in this last scenario where we talked about Chalev, the Gemara came to the conclusion that Eid Echad doesn't work exactly how we thought. That Eid Echad, it's not sufficient that you have an Eid Echad. It seems to be that the silence of the defendant is actually really what causes the obligation or the culpability over here. Because shtika ke hoda'ah. So it's really the Eid Echad with the shtika or the hoda'ah of the party that he is accusing that allows the Eid Echad to have any weight in these cases. Which means, underlying that is, that the Eid Echad has no power. If the Eid Echad has no power, then how could you suggest over here in our Mishnah that the Eid Echad is giving us the reason for why she's allowed to get married? Because Eid Echad really doesn't have any power. And in our case, Shtika Gehodah is not relevant, because her silence is not an acquiescence, because she doesn't know. And there's no way you can determine through her silence that we know any more information about the case. So there, the Gemara left off with that and says, okay, we have to change the tune now. And the tune here is Elas Varehi. It is a logical argument that an Eid Echad is Neman, and this is what you just mentioned, which is Eid Echad Neman Bisurim. That we have this principle that an Eid Echad is Neman Bisurim. Why is an Eid Echad Neman Bisurim? Rashi says, very interesting Rashi, literally, Svarehi. It's a logical argument that you have to believe in Eid Echad. It's the wide line in the Rashi. Dilav hochi, ein lecha adam, ochel misho chaveiro. You can never eat your friend's house. If Eid Echad's net now meim yisurim, how can you go over your friend's house and eat there? Vein lecha adam somecha bnei beito. And then how can you trust your wife to take off trumot masrot or your children to help you out? Nobody would be believed, and you would create a situation in which it would be untenable. So Rashi really looks at it as being a svaro. As literally a logical argument that Eid Echad is Neman Bisurim, because otherwise life would be impossible. There's no way. You couldn't trust anybody. You didn't need a dote on everything that you ate. The Tosfot Yishonim says, Ein Ochanami. Exactly. That's exactly what you're going to have to do. If you want to eat, you have to have a deem. What's the big deal? That's right. A deem in order to eat. On the other hand, Tosfot Yishonim, but more importantly, the Tosfot over here and Tosfot other places in Shas, says that Eid Echad Neman Bisurim derives from the din of Nida. That a woman who is in Nida, the Torah says that she, Bisafra La, that she counts her days of Tumah, and then she determines when she is Tehora. Same thing with the Zavah Gdola. She is the Shiva Nikiim. Over there, the Torah empowers the woman to make a decision regarding Isur. Here she is, Tmeya Asura Lebala. And then we rely on her to tell us when she can go to the mikveh, that she's gone to the mikveh, that she's Mutara Lebala. And here she is in Eid Echad, that is Ne'eman Bi'isurim. And so Tosafot sees that as being the paradigm for the fact that Eid Echad is Ne'eman Bi'isurim. Not a logical argument like Rashi suggests, but literally the Torah shows us through the Nida that Eid Echad is Ne'eman Bi'isurim. Now, Tosafot says, wait a minute, it's not so simple by Nida, because by Nida, we're going to see in the Gemara, is going to ask some a question along these lines, is Itchazek Bi'isura. We've already established that she is Asura, and once you have a chazoka that something is asur, to undermine that chazoka, then two edim might not even help. Because once we establish that it is asur, then to undermine that or to reverse that is very difficult. So by the nida, once we've established that she is tmeya, that she's asura lebala, that's itchazek isura, and then why should she be believed in that case? Now, if you do say she's believed in that case, that shows you that Eid Echad may be even believed in the face of itchazek isura. So the Rishonim deal with this in different ways. Some simply say that it is a gzerat hakatuv, that the woman is believed over here, because what else are we going to do? There's no other way for us to know. This is something that's very personal to the woman. It's something that without the woman helping us out, there's just no way we're going to know the information that we need to know. So some suggest that it's a gzerat hakatuv, period. Tosafot over here says that it's not really itchazek isura. It's not itchazek isura in the classic sense where, for instance, if a piece of meat is not kasher, it's trefa, or you have fats that are chalev, they will not change their status. They will remain be'isur for the remainder of their existence. By a nida cycles. So you can never really call a nida itchazek be'isura, because we know, by definition, there will be a time when she is not a nida. And so therefore, Tosafot says, maybe it's not called itchazek isura over here. But based on that, Tosafot says that Eid Echad is Ne'eman Bi'isurim is learned out of this din in the Torah of Nida. And that's how we know Eid Echad Ne'eman Bi'isurim. So that'll become the paradigm from which we know that Eid Echad is Ne'eman Bi'isurim. And then it'll have broader application. For instance, that people are trusted with regards to Kashrut. People are trusted with regards to taking off Trumot and Masrot. All of these things derive from this idea or this concept that Eid Echad is Ne'eman Bi'isurim. I suppose the Rashi just says that it's a logical argument, but the same results will come from that, which is that Eid Echad is Ne'eman Bi'isurim. Now the Gemara is trying to use that as the paradigm for why over here the Eid Echad is Ne'eman. Okay. With regards to Eid Echad Ne'eman Bi'isurim, over here we're not talking about Eidut, even though they're using the word Eid over here, but it's really a borrowed term. It's not that there's Eidut, there's testimony here, and we are in the structure of a court system and talking about Eid Echad. It's a borrowed term which just says that like two edim are believed when they come and testify, meaning that the Torah granted them that type of ne'emanut when they come to testify. Eid Echad Ne'eman Bi'isurim doesn't literally mean there's edut here, but rather that this person is trusted. And that's an important thing. It's a giloi milta. The Torah has empowered this individual to be trusted in these situations. Again, Rashi says because it's untenable otherwise. How are you going to eat at home if your wife serves food, if you don't have witnesses, the fact that it's kasher? Tosafot, because of the paradigm of Nida, that we're trusted. Now, because of that, it doesn't follow the normal rules of Eidut. That means that a person who is a relative is still trusted with regards to Yisurim. A woman is trusted with regards to Yisurim, because we're not talking about Eidut in the sense of testimony, we're talking about Eidut in the sense of clarification, in order to define for us what is good and what is bad over here. And that's what it's meant by Eid Echad Ne'eman Bi'isurim. There are times when a person can lose their Ne'emanut, not because they're not a kosher aid necessarily, but because they lose their trustworthiness in situations. One of those things, which is the lack of Shmirat Shabbat. A person who's not Shomer Shabbat already shows us that the halachot do not matter as much to them. And therefore they lose a certain status of being Ne'eman Bi'isurim in those situations. Obviously, if they have a prior record of causing problems, they also could lose their Ne'emanut in certain situations. So, again, it's based on Ne'emanut, not Eidut, but that Ne'emanut can also be lost because of factors that take away a person's trustworthiness. All right, so now the Gemara says, El Svarahi, Our case here in the Mishnah is the equivalent of a case where you have a piece of meat fat that's there, and we're not sure if it's chelev or shuman. Chelev being fat that is asur, shuman being fat that is mutar. Va'ata eidachat, and then one eidachat comes along and says, v'mar, bari li de shumanhu. I'm sure, I'm certain about this piece of meat or this fat here that it's shuman, it's mutar. De Mohammed, we believe him over there. If he comes and makes a factual statement that he is certain about, then we believe him. There's no reason not to believe him in this case. They say that it is shuman. So now Gemara says, midomi. Wait a minute. That case is not similar to the case in our Mishnah because hatam lo itchazek isura. Over there, you have a safek in the object. The object itself, we have no idea if it's shuman or chelev, and the aid, it comes and clears it up for us. In the case, halcha itchazek isura de shadish. Over here, as far as we're concerned, this woman, the last we know about her is she's married. That's the last piece of information that we have for certain is that she's married. Now, if she's married, she's the equivalent of a chaticha asura. She's as if she is asura. Until we have clarification on it, this woman is otherwise, has a chazaka of being asur, means she's an eshet ish. And so why should an eid echad, in this case, make a difference? V'ein davar sheb'erva pachot mishnayim. When it comes to davar sheb'erva, arayot, including eshet ish, we don't release that without two eidim. So why should eid echad be sufficient over here? How strong this question of the Gemara is about Ein Davar Sheb'erva Pachot Mishnayim, whether that's just a way for the Gemara to get to the next stage, or is that really a strong question of the Gemara, that you need Shnei Eidim here, and that Eid Echad is not going to function at all, is a Machlok Nevishonim, and will impact how they see the conclusion of the Gemara over here. So Gemara says, Alodamya, Ela Lechaticha Devadai Chelev. This is the equivalent of a case where you have a piece that is otherwise known to us to be fat that is Asur. Then we have an eid echad come along and say, no, I'm sure that that is shuman and that it's fine. To lo mehemen, over there we don't believe him. Over there, since the surah was already established, an eid echad can't come and undermine what we know as being common knowledge or something that is well accepted. So do over here, yaveshadish, then an eid echad can't come and change the status of this woman. It says, midomi, how can you compare those cases? Over there by the chelev, even 100 people show up and tell us that it's shuman, we're not going to change our stance because it was already established to be chelev. Once it's established to be chelev, to change that status, nobody can change that status at this point in time because it already has a shame iser on it. Now, maybe for themselves, if they testify about it, they could eat it themselves because they are certain that it's shuman. But that doesn't give us necessarily believability for other people. We're not going to rely on these people and say that it is. Now, shuman, after we know that it was chelev beforehand. Again, if it was a safek and we weren't sure about it, then the testimony or the clarification by those individuals is important. But once we've been already known and it's been established that it was chelev, now all of a sudden somebody shows up, zah, it's not chelev. That doesn't have any bearing. Hocha came into chiatu beitrei mehemne. On the other hand, over here, if two eidim showed up and said her husband passed away, so then we would believe those eidim. Two eidim would be believed in this case. So ha, chad nami lehemne. So therefore, maybe over here also one eid will be believed. So the Gemara says that this case of eshet ish sits between the two cases that we brought. It's not like the case of safek shuman and safek chelef, because they are lo itchazek isura, versus here we have itchazek isura. It's not like the case where we say we've established it's chelef, because over there, there's nothing that will change our mind about the status. Yeah, but eshet ish, if two eidim show up and say that her husband died, we will believe them. So that, where does that leave one eid in this situation? So Gemara says, maybe over here, one eid should be believed because two eidim are believed as well. That isura is not such a itchazik isura where we're unwilling to change the status of the woman. Gemara says, midahava atevel hektesh vikonamot. That the case of tevel, tevel is items who yet have their trumot and masrot removed from them. Hektesh is when somebody's makdish something, and konamot is a form of neder hektesh, which we'll see what that means. So where it says, hai tevel hechidami. What is this tevel over here that you're comparing it to? Idide, if it's his own tevel, the reason that he's believed is, mishum de biadolu takno. If something, and this is a key item that Tosafot will mention in the Gemara in Gittin, as well as in the Gemara in Ketubot, with regards to Erecha Ne'eman Bisurin, he says is that, most of the ne'manut with regards to eid echad is that person has the power to determine the situation. So if you're a person who can separate out the Trumot and Masrot, it's within your capability and power to do it. That's why you're believed over here, because you can change the status of the item. It's got to be something that you can do in order to be believed. So here, that's what Gemara says. Shem Yad Lataknu, Elo Dacher. Well, you've done that somebody else's Tevel, now you're believed about their Tevel. Maika Savar. Ika Savar, Torei Mishelo Ashal Chevero. If you believe that a person can take off Trumot and Masrot on behalf of another party, even without their knowledge, Eino Tzarich Dat Balim, even without the acquiescence of the owner, you could be Mafrish Trumot and Masrot for him. So about why again is he believed then? Mishum Debi Adol Lataknu. So you're believed about your Tevel and your friend's Tevel is because in both cases you can be the party that fixes the problem. If you do need the Dat Balim, you need the owners to agree that you are taking off the Trumot and Masrot. And he could say that I know for certain that he was mitakan it. He gufa minolan. How do you know that's the case? I mean, if that's your proof, then an edachar is neman. Tell me how you know that that's the case in the situation where you have no control over it. So the Gemara says, what type of tevel we're talking about? If we have tevel where you have control, then the reason you're believed is because you have control and you have the ability to change it from tevel into not tevel. On the other hand, it's a case where you don't have control, and now you're saying that's the paradigm by which we know Edechad is Neman Bisurim. Show me that he's believed in that case. Show me the evidence of the fact that we believe someone when he's not in control of the Tevel. So the same thing again, the Gemara says, Hekdesh Nami. Ikedushat Damim. If we're talking about someone who's Makdish, an object for its monetary value, then Mishum Yadol Liftoto. Because there he can redeem it. So the reason he could tell us that it's mutar is because he could have exchanged the hektesh on this onto money, onto some other object, and moved the hektesh from here to there. Because he has that control, that's why we believe him. Kedushat aguf. If it is that he was makdishit to be a korban, to go on mizbeach, which is kedushat aguf, where the kedusha is inherent to the object, and therefore you can't redeem it, you can't change it off. Ididei, if it's his own korban, then mishum diadoli chulei alei. The reason that he's believed again is because Hekdesh is like a neder. It's like committing to bring something to Hekdesh. So since it's like a neder, you can do Hatarat Nidarim. Just like you do Hatarat Nidarim for a neder, you can do Hatarat Nidarim for Hekdesh as well. So since you have the ability to unwind the Hekdesh, so too you have the ability to tell us whether it is or isn't Hekdesh. Ela Dacher. Again, so they're talking about someone else's Korban. Vamar, Yadana Bey, Dichal, Marei, Alei. So then saying, I know that he went and got Hatarat Nidarim for this, Hekdesh. Again, the Gemara says, he gufa minolan. How do you know that's the case? How do you know that the Eid Echad is Neman in these situations? And then the last one, Konamot Nami. Now, Ikasavar Yesh Mi'ila B'Konamot. If you believe that there is Mi'ila by Konamot, U'Kedushat Damim Nachta Luhu, and therefore there is what's called Kedushat Damim, it's Hekdesh over here, Konamot is a lashon of neder that is brought in the Gemara in the Darim in Nazir. It seems to be that it is an intentional change of the word korban to play on the word korban. But konamot can be, according to the Gemara, as a machloket as to what it does or how it functions. Is konam just like any other lashon neder, which the Mishnayot in the Darim come up with all these different lashonot on how to establish a neder? Konam is one of those lashonot. And so you say, when you say konam, it means it should be asur to me like a korban. That's what konam means. It's a shorthanded form for saying that the object that I'm talking about, say it's the food item here, is konam alai, which means that it's like a korban to me. It's asur to me. That's one way to express it. The other possibility is that that object is a korban. Now, can't be a korban, which means that you've now been makdishit for its monetary value. That's a machloket as to how, what konam does. Is konam hektesh? Or is konam neder? One of the lashonot that we mentioned in Kol Nidre, it's just the question is, what's it doing? How's it functioning? Everybody sees it as functioning like the word korban, but the question is, what does that mean? Does that mean you're making a sur like a korban, like a neder, to make it a sur on you? Or are you really literally making it into a korban in the sense that you're donating the money to Hekdesh? And that's the argument over there, and that's what the Gemara says. Ikasavar yesh mi'ila b'konamot. If you believe there's mi'ila b'konamot, which means you think it's Hekdesh, then kedushat tamim nachta luho. Then this thing has, this object has monetary value that is shayach to Hekdesh, mishum diyado liftoto. Then it becomes exactly like the case of Hekdesh, which is, since you have the ability to redeem it, that's why you're believed with regards to this object. Ika savar, eimi yilavi konamot. If you think that konamot is like a regular neder, it's not making it into Hekdesh. V'isur ba'almahu derochiv luhu akatvei. And therefore, it's just a regular Isur of Nidarim, Ididei, if it's his own neder and it's his own object, Mishum to be adoli chule alei. Because there he can get Hatarat Nidarim, just like we mentioned before by Hekdesh, by Kedushat Aguf. Eladacher. Again, what are you going to suggest over here? It belongs to someone else. It's someone else's konam. Vamar ani adana d'itchio mare alei. Then if he says, I know that he got a tarat nidarim for it, now you're back to the same situation we remember before, is he gufa minoan. How do you know that that's the case, that an ed echad is neman in that situation? Now, in terms of konamot, you should just know, the Rabbeinu Tam mentions it here, the Ran in the Darim takes it up in more detail based on this Rabbeinu Tam, which is that there actually might be a difference between how you express the konam. If you express the konam as being a personal isur, or you express it as a general isur. The Rabbeinu Tam says, if you use the word konam in a context of making something asur to you, or personally asur, that functions like a neder. When you use the word konam to make it asur, what he calls an isur kwali, which is to make it asur on everybody, then you're using it like hekdesh, and it will function like hekdesh. So it actually depends on how you express the konam, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Are you using it as a term of neder, and that's muchach, because of the fact that you only make it asur to yourself? Or are you using it like hekdesh, because you're creating a general restriction on this object, which is the equivalent of hekdesh, and therefore the konam is functioning like hekdesh? And that's the only place where the machloket exists, is in this konam kwali. Is that like hekdesh or not like hekdesh? So that's where Rabbeinu Tam narrows the question about konam. In addition to that, once you've established that it is like hekdesh, how is it different than hekdesh? So there are really actually three levels here. There is an isur konam, which functions like a neder. There's an isur konam that functions like hekdesh, but there's also real hekdesh. And then you have to explain what's the difference between a konam and real hektesh. And that's, again, what the Ran takes up in the Darim to explain why there are different levels over here. It's mentioned in passing in the Tosafot over here with regards to konamot. Okay, so now what the Gemara tried to establish now is that Eid Echad is Neman B'Yisurim. And since an Eid Echad is Neman B'Yisurim Midoraita, and therefore he should be believed with regards to this woman. The Gemara says, wait, how can you say that? This is a Dover Shebe'erva. The Dover Shebe'erva, how can you allow this aid to be believed? Even if you think that an aid echad is neman bisurim, and it's not itchazek isura, nevertheless, you should still not believe him because he's an aid echad, and he's not bringing you real edut. The Gemara says, why shouldn't we believe him? We have plenty of cases where you have a deraita problem, and we let an aid echad take care of the problem. Tevel, kekdesh, konamot, these are all dinim deoraita, mina Torah, and yet we let an aid echad deal with them. So why can't you say the same thing over here? In each of those cases, we showed the reason that the Eid Echad is Neman is not necessarily because he's an Eid Echad, but because, b'yadolo takno, he has the ability to change the status of the item or control the status of the item. Since he has control over that, therefore he is believed. But in a case where he doesn't have control, the Gemara itself says, how do you know he's believed by Tevel? How do you know he's believed by Hekdesh? How do you know he's believed by Konamot? Which is the equivalent of our case. In our case, they don't have control over the situation, neither does the woman. The woman doesn't have control over the situation. It's a question, did he pass away or did he not pass away? The only instance where he possibly could have control over the situation, he said, I killed him. If Eid Echad comes and says that I killed him, then he really was, in a sense, in control of that situation. But he might have another problem, which is, Ein Adam Misim Etzmo Rasha, and therefore he may not be believed by the fact that he killed him or that he is dead. There, the Gemara talks about what's called Palgina Dibura, bifurcating his testimony and saying he's believed with the far regards to the fact that the husband passed away, but not about the fact that he murdered him. But then you're back to square one, which is we're not believing him with regards to the fact that he murdered him. So now, in here, again, in our case, why is the Eid Echad Neman? That's our question, and we don't have an answer to that, because even in other areas we find Eid Echad Neman, it's not functioning like we need it to function here, because it has other properties to the Eid Echad Neman in those situations. That's what I said to you before, that it's not clear when the Gemara says, Ein Davar She'erva Pachot Mishnayim, what the Gemara is asking. Are they saying that that's a hard fact, that the Davar She'erva needs two Edim, period, and therefore you're stuck now? And then really the rest of the Gemara is a little questionable why the Gemara goes down this road. Or is the Gemara just putting that up as a fall guy, like it's a fall question? Just, we're going to ask it so that we can get on to the next stage of the Gemara. But the Gemara never brings proof to the fact that there ain't the Davar She'erva Pachot Mishnayim. All the Gemara is saying is that general edut, or when you have a problem, you need two edim. So Gemara says, well, I have a whole bunch of other scenarios, deoraita, where you don't need two edim. So which one is it like? Is it like the case where you need two edim? Is it like the case where you need one aid? I mean, we quote it as a hard, fast rule, that ain't davar shebe'erva pachot mishnayim. And the Gemara says it, but the Gemara here offers no proof to the fact that that's the case. But the fact that they don't brought for proof shows the Ramban believes over here, it means that it's just a question to move the sugya on. It's not a question that says that we can't get beyond it. Now, the Gemara's conclusion over here is we don't know why we have the Eidecha Neman in our Mishnah. And here we have the answer to that question, which is Amar Rabbi Zera, Mito Chomer Shechechmart Alea B'Sofa, Hekalt Alea B'Tchila. So now, the Gemara says, because of the Chumrah that we assigned her in the end, is why we were lenient with her in the beginning. So Mar says, lo lichmir velo likel. Don't be machmir in the end, and don't be makel in the beginning. Just be mamid at al divrei Torah, and let it work on the Torah. Mishom iguna kiluba rabbana. So here is the final stage and the answer to this question, which is, because we don't want a woman being anchored, from the word ogen, which is she is locked in place, because this woman, and again, in a time where communication was not easy, and the situation is that we may not get this information for years, or may never get this information. We don't want this woman then stuck for the rest of her life in a position where she can't get out of the situation. So because of that, the Chachamim wanted to make it possible for the woman to be released from her marriage. But that's a risky proposition. To allow a woman to be released from her marriage based on an Eid Echad has risk embedded in it. So why do we allow that risk to be taken? Because Hechmarta B'Sofa, which is that the penalties that the Mishnah lays out in the end are severe penalties, which are, if the husband shows up afterwards, she's going to lose everything. Everything means she's going to have to divorce the new husband, the old husband, and everything else. She's going to lose her ketubah. There's everything that the Mishnah mentioned, which is going to ruin her life, basically. That is the back end of the situation, which is Hechmarta B'Sofa. We are very machmir on the back end, so that in the front end we can be makil. Why do we want to be makil on the front end? Because of aguna. We don't want her to be stuck. So what does being machmir in the back end do? It will encourage her to only make a decision where she has a certain amount of certainty in the situation. She will investigate. She will look into it. She just won't take it for granted that this Eid Echad testified and said that this person or her husband is dead. She'll make inquiries and she'll try to really figure it out. So we balance the situation by saying that the penalties are so high that that will be a preventative measure against abuse of this idea that an Eid Echad is Neman in this situation. So that's what the Gemara says is that Mishumi Guna Kiluba Rabbanan, that the Rabbanan over here allowed it to go through and to marry based on Eid Echad. And we don't worry about the fact that she's going to abuse this ability to rely on an Eid Echad and just use it to go off and have an extramarital affair, because if she does that and then the husband shows up, then whoa, 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 because of what the Mishnah said, it's going to be a disaster for her. So it's not just like a little game that she plays. She says, yeah, my husband's away. Eid Echad said that he's dead. He passed away. Let me go have some fun until he comes back because he's been gone a long time. That won't happen here because the penalties are so severe. All right, so now in the conclusion, the question is Eid Echad Neman Bisurim De'oraita? Ramban says yes, that Eid Echad is Neman Bisurim De'oraita. And that is, in a sense, what we're invoking over here, that Eid Echad is Neman Bisurim De'oraita. And the Rabbanan are willing to take a risk with this, even though it's Arayot over here, which is more severe. We have a semblance of Itchazek Yisura over here. Nevertheless, the Chachamim will take the risk because of Aguna. So they allow what is normally Eid Echad Neman Bisurim, even on a Doraita level. Now, once we have that established, is it applicable in this case? So that is questionable. That's what the Gemara was trying to deal with over here. It's questionable whether it should be applicable over here. In the end, the Gemara or the Rabbanan said it is applicable, even though they're not certain that it should be applicable over here because of Aguna. So the Rabbanan applied a principle of Eid Echad Neman Bisurim Doraita to our situation, but they balanced that out with the penalties afterwards, which is that if you abuse it, you're really going to end up in a bad situation. That's the way the Ramban views it. Others say that, no, Eid Echad is not Ne'eman Bisurin. And the real question is because of what Tosafot says. Tosafot says, how can you be Oker Dover Sheba Torah? The Torah demands that you have two Eidim over here. Then how can you say that one Eid works? Dover Sheba is not Pachot Nishnayim. How can you say the Chachamim all of a sudden come along and say there is one Eid and it's fine? Everything's good. That's being Oker Dover Sheba Torah. Again, according to the Ramban, that question in the Gemara wasn't a real question. It was just a way to get on to the next part of the sugya, and the Gemara has no proof that you need two Eidim by Erva, and therefore in the end it establishes that Eid Echad Neman Bisurim, it's not Oker Dover Min HaTorah, because it's not the Torah principle that you need two Eidim. That's the way the Ramban learns it. Tosafot is clearly bothered by the fact that you really do need two Edim by Erva, and therefore he asks the question, why isn't this called Oker Dover Min HaTorah? So Tosafot over here says that there are other reasons for being Mekil over here, not just the Eid Echad. Elami Takanat Chachamim Hu De Ne'eman. The Eid here is believed from a Takanat Chachamim. Ve'ein Ze Akirat Davar Min HaTorah. This is not Oker Dover Min HaTorah. Kevin Shedomea Davar Hagun Lahamin. Since there are other factors that would make us believe this Eid over here, therefore it's ra'oi, it makes sense to believe him in this situation. So davar sheyesh tzat tam, because it is something that makes sense. V'smach lo chashiv oker davar min haTorah. And the fact that we can rely on these other items is not oker min haTorah. What Tosafot suggests over here is that when you're talking about just straight out edut, and you're talking about two Eidim versus one Eid, you'd be right. That if the Chachamim allowed an Eid Echad to come testify where you need two Eidim, that's Oker Davar Min HaTorah. And that would be unacceptable. So why is this not called Oker Davar Min HaTorah? Because over here, there are reasons to believe the Eid Echad. It's not your typical situation of Eidut and testimony. And because of either circumstantial evidence, other items that make it that there's a reason to believe the Eid over here, that's enough to say that it's differentiated than the normal case in the Torah. And since it's differentiated from the normal case in the Torah, you're not Oker Davar Min HaTorah, because this is not the case that the Torah spoke about where you require two Eidim. It's slightly different. Since it's slightly different, that is why it works. Now, there are other Rishonim who say more explicitly that Eid Echad is only Ne'eman where there are other factors that come in. And therefore, they say over here, the Eid Echad being Ne'eman is all the Rabbanan, like the Tosfot seems to be suggesting, because Eid Echad is only Ne'eman b'deoraita. Tosfot says this in Gitin, is when it's v'yado l'takno, when he has the ability to change the situation. When he has the ability to control the situation, that's where Eid Echad is Ne'eman m'deoraita. Over here, we're clearly invoking a principle de Rabbanan, but the principle of the Rabbanan is not going straight head on with the Torah law, because the Torah law talks about a case where there aren't other factors, and therefore the Shtei Edim are required and not one Eid. Over here you have other factors that make it believable, and because of those other factors, the Eid Echad's Ne'eman without being Oker Davar Shiba Torah. Again, it's only Midi Rabbanan, but it's not going head on with the Din Torah. As Tosfot says, there's a reason to believe this Eid Echad over here, or because woman gets to a point where she says Barili. Which is another way that when a person says, I'm certain about something, they are believed, because they're able to, for themselves, make an establishment of something yes and something no. So again, here, she can say, I'm certain my husband passed away, and that would be enough. Then the Eid Echad is only helping her, it's not actually making the testimony to free her. In the end, it's she who says that my husband has passed away, and she, because it's Bari Laher, she can act on that assumption. Dehi gufa daika ad yada bekushta mintzva. That's the principle here, that she is midayeket based on the testimony of the aid until she comes to a point of certainty. And so now in Beit Din just checks that all the process and procedure has been done right, but in the end we're relying on this woman, and that the woman really checked it out, and she wouldn't show up with the Zayd Echad to go get married unless she had a certain amount of certainty. So in the end, Beit Din is also relying on the certainty of the woman over here. Again, she has to reach a point where in her mind there's a certain amount of certainty with regards to the death of this husband. Again, we have an Eid Echad, which is important, but she'll look into it. She'll make sure that the testimony and understand the circumstances and not play games with this because of the risks in the back end. But you're right, the Eid Echad here will only work with Beit Din. But again, Beit Din is really just making sure that procedurally that everything is right and the Eid is a trustworthy individual and the woman's not abusing it. But in the end, what we're relying on is the woman's determination that she believes and is certain about the situation. It's a very famous story about Rav Moshe Feinstein that post-Holocaust and post-World War II, there were a lot of women who didn't know. They were agunot in the sense that her husbands were in the Holocaust, they have no idea if they passed away, didn't pass away, they don't know where they are, they haven't heard from them. You know, we have plenty of stories where siblings or even couples meet tens of years later because it was very difficult after the war to figure out or find people. And then everybody assumed everybody else was dead, and so therefore they didn't even search for them. And then many years later, they finally found each other, they have a reunion of sorts. But there are cases where Rav Moshe was very involved in being Matir Agunot after the war. And so then a woman comes to him many years later and says, you know, Rav Moshe, you were matir me, and now my husband showed up. After you were matir me to marry, my husband showed up. So Rav Moshe had the woman sit down and he had some talmidim there, and Rav Moshe says, just keep saying to her, was I matir you? Was I matir you? Was I matir you? Was I matter you? And finally she breaks down and cries and says no. And so his students ask him, what happened? He says, I have a mesora that in these cases, if we are matir agunot, based on the principles that the Gemara lays out, I have a mesora that the husband will not show up, that it won't be, that we're only matir agunot, Hashem will only let us be matir agunot in the situations where it's really true. And so when the woman come and said her husband showed up, he says, it's for sure I didn't give a psak halacha like that. He was so certain that the Torah process and the halacha would only work with matir agunot in a case where the husband was passed away. I mean, the halachic reality was reality, therefore that he didn't, when she came in and said that you were matir mir, he was certain that that wasn't the case. And he pressed on her until she admitted that he wasn't matir her and that she had done it on her own, and then it, her husband unfortunately had showed up and caused the, obviously it's a difficult situation. That might be another way why it's working over here. Tosafot thinks the conclusion is that Eirach HaDeir is only Neman Derabanan. The Ramban believes that Eirach HaDeir is a Din De Oraita. Now, we need the Rabbanan to say that it works here, even though it's not obvious that it works over here. For Tosafot, Eirach HaDeir Neman Bisurim is a different category because it has other factors, like Biadola Takno and other things that help you out in those situations. Others suggest that the Rabbanan are invoking their power to be mafkin and kiddushay, which is that they have the ability to unwind kiddushin. This is a very dangerous principle. It's so dangerous that you actually won't find it in the Rambam. When the Rambam comes to Paskin Halacha, he never mentions this principle, which is that the Rabbanan have the ability to be oker kiddushin the mafreya, that they can retroactively undermine the kiddushin because of hefker baked in hefker and other principles that the Gemara discusses in kiddushin. So some Rishonim suggest that's how it's working here. The Chachamim allowed the Eirach HaDeir to be Neman over here because they have the ability to unwind the original Kiddushin. The difficulty with that explanation is the penalties that we levy afterwards are extremely high and they involve what seemingly is Mamzerut Doraita and other things that are problematic. If the Rabbanim really were okay the Kiddushin, you wouldn't be really faced with these issues Doraita because they retroactively unwound the original Kiddushin. So it is suggested, but most of the Rishonim reject that understanding over here of Eirach HaDeir Neman Bi'isurin with regards to Erva. The other reason Rishonim over here say that the Eirach HaDeir is Neman by the Isha is because it's a Davar She'ati L'Gluyei. It's something in the end that is going to be revealed. It's information that we can eventually know or figure out. So over there, the Eirach HaDeir is Neman, and Neman over here by the woman, because if he lies, this Eirach HaDeir, he knows, and eventually we're going to find out that the husband was alive or wasn't alive. So there is a mitigating factor as to the aid telling the truth over here, because we have that hanging over his head that we will know, and he will lose all reliability if the husband shows up now. So the person is going to be sure they only testify when they know for certain that that's the case, because they don't want to be proven a liar. So that is what is added to Eirach HaDeir over here. In other cases of testimony where we're arguing about facts, we're arguing about circumstances, over there, we're never going to get clarity as to what happened. And so over there, Eirach HaDeir is not Neman. But over here, where we will eventually get clarity to the situation, then an Eirach HaDeir is Neman, and that's what makes this case unique and why we believe Eirach HaDeir in this case. But again, it's a discussion amongst the Rishonim, but the conclusion is that our mission is talking about an Eirach HaDeir. And the Eirach HaDeir is giving testimony that her husband passed away, and that's allowing her to get married in this case. Alright. Teitze mizeh mizeh. She has to divorce both of them. Amarav, lo shanu ela shenisei be'Eirach HaDeir. That's only if she got married with one eid. Aval nisei al pi shnei eidim lo teitze. If two eidim came and testified that her husband's dead, and she got married, then she doesn't have to get divorced. So mechaku alei b'marova. Right, you're sitting here in Eretz Yisrael also, and Eretz Yisrael, they started to laugh. Her husband's standing here. Right? They test two witnesses said her husband's dead, and now her husband's standing right in front of us. And we say, oh, you don't have to get divorced. Don't worry about it. The Eidim said he's dead. But he's standing right here. How could you say that he's dead? How could you even contemplate the fact that she doesn't have to get divorced? That's the assumption of the Gemara, is that lo teitzei means she doesn't have to divorce the second husband. Lo tzricha delo yadinen le. It's a case where we don't know for certain that that's the husband. He comes in and claims that he's the husband. So if he comes in and we have no idea if he's the husband, even with Eirach HaDeir, why should she get divorced? I mean, that why is he believed more than the Eirach HaDeir that first came and said that the husband is dead? If we don't know who the husband is and he shows up and says, I'm the husband, and nobody knows if that's the case or not, then he should be no better than the original Eirach HaDeir and she should remain married. Why should she get divorced? So, hello, tzricha. The atu beitrei. Ve'amrei anan havinan behadei. Michinafek vadhashta. Two edim show up and say, we were with this husband from the time he left until the time he came back. Va'atanhu doliyaditule. You don't know who he is. So you guys may not know who he is, but we're certain that this is her husband because we were with him from the time he left here until the time he returned. So if that's the case, now we have two edim testifying that he is the husband. And then you have, on the other side of this, two edim are testifying that she was mutar to get married because the husband passed away. So now we have the equivalent of trey and trey. You have two edim against two edim, and then it's edut mucheshet, which means an edut that is now hung in a sense, which is that we have two saying yes, two saying no. And generally in that case, it's a fake. We leave it as a status quo. We're not going to change it. So if she's married already, then we're not going to force her to divorce. If she is yet to get married, we're not going to let her get married anymore because there is questions about the edut that he had passed away. Now the Gemara says, how do you have such a situation in which edim come back and say this is the husband and nobody recognizes him? How is it possible that nobody knows what he looked like? He's coming back to his hometown and nobody knows who he is. Dichtiv, we have that example in the Parsha. Vayakir Yosef et Echav, v'hem lo yikiru. His brothers show up in Mitzrayim, and he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. So now the Gemara says, v'amar Rav Chista Malameich, yatsa below chatimat zakan. He went out without a beard, ubaba chatimat zakan, and then he grew a beard. I mean that he matured in the time period between the time he left, he was 17. He wasn't growing a full beard, he was still had a baby face. By the time they get down there, he's already got a full beard and face that's covered, and therefore they don't recognize him. So the Gemara sees it as being a process of maturity. If you see someone when they are young, and then you see them again when they're much older and they have a beard, it's very hard to see the same person in that face. You may not recognize them. And that's what the Gemara suggests over here. Yosef's brothers are older than him. They already had their mature look, and so he recognizes them when they come down. But he had yet to have that mature look, and he matured in the time period he was away from his family. It's going from the age of 17 till 39, let's call it roughly 38, 39 when they see him. So that's a long period of time. He's changed significantly in terms of his look, in terms of his maturity, and in terms of the fact that he has a beard, and therefore they don't recognize him. I always say about this, the Gemara, that typically when you are in a situation, you come to your house, you're in your hometown, and you see people, you recognize them. If you are now far away on a vacation, you're somewhere, we don't expect to see a person. You don't expect the person who, even though you know them well, you don't expect them to be there. You can literally walk right by them and not see them because in your mind, you don't associate them with being here. And so therefore, you could walk by them, even though in a situation where you were in the home or in the supermarket, you wouldn't miss them and you walk by them. But in a situation where you don't expect them to be, you could be looking right at them and not even notice they're there, recognize they're there. Especially if you don't think they're going to be there right here where they think he's going to be dead. So I always quote that. It's a known psychological phenomenon. And so that's the same thing over here. Yosef knows his brothers are alive and we didn't know they were going to show up, but at least he has a sense that maybe they would show up. But his brothers don't expect to see Yosef for a number of reasons. First of all, why would they expect him to see him in Mitzrayim? Why would they expect him to see him as the leader in Mitzrayim? And they're not even sure if he's alive anymore. They have no idea where Yosef is. And so they have no expectation of seeing Yosef, and therefore, even if they're looking right at him, they might not see Yosef there because they're not expecting him. That's one possibility. The other possibility is we know from the pyramids and the mummies in Mitzrayim that the pharaohs and the leaders or the top echelons in Mitzrayim used to wear a sort of mask or something over their face, whether it was held up or whether it was worn like a mask, like a burn mask, but they wore these golden masks or these adorned masks on their faces. So that's another possibility of why they didn't recognize Yosef is because they weren't looking at Yosef. They're looking at a mask there. There's no way for them to know that it's Yosef. Anyway, both of those are possibilities as to why they don't recognize Yosef, just to enhance what the Gemara says over here about the fact that they didn't recognize Yosef. So there, the Gemara says, okay, so now we have a situation where it's plausible that they don't recognize the husband. He left when he was young, he comes back, he's a lot older, he left looking like this, comes back looking like something else. Maybe it's possible that people don't recognize him. But then the Gemara says, so, treu trei ninu. Bottom line. What's the bottom line? You have two versus two now. You have two saying that he's dead, and two saying that he's standing right in front of us here. If someone now has a affair with this woman, then there's a possibility she's an Eshet Ish. It's a possibility she's not an Eshet Ish. So what do you do in that case? If he had Bial with her B'Shogeg, he would bring a Chatat. If he did it intentionally, he would be chayav, parei to be chayav, mita in Beit Din. So then what happens in a case we have uncertainty? In the case of uncertainty, we have something called an asham taloi. Asham taloi is a korban that is brought, where if you did it bishogeg, you would bring a chatat. But the problem is here is we just don't know. We don't know if this woman's married or not married. So we don't know if he engaged in an activity with biyah with this woman. We don't know if he's in violation of eshish or not in violation of eshish. What does he do? He brings a korban, asham taloi. That's what the Gemara says over here. Someone who had a relationship, an intimate relationship with this woman, would be obligated to bring an asham taloi because of that uncertainty. So if that's the case, how are we letting this woman stay married to this individual if nothing had happened yet? And someone had an affair with her at this point, we would tell them, bring an asham taloi because you may be chayav a korban chatat. So how can we let them stay together? Tosafot about over here discusses how exactly this is an asham taloi, because the Gemara in Kretot lays out the qualifications for an asham taloi. It has to be one piece from amongst two pieces that are in front of you. There's certain rules about when you bring an Hashem Taloi, and so Tosafot tries to figure out how this case fits into those rules that are set up in the Gemara and Kretot. So Amar Rav Sheshet, Kegon Sheniseit Le'achad Me'edah. So now the Gemara says, no, she's marrying one of the Edim. So now, again, we said this before, when an Ed comes along and says, Borili, I'm certain about the situation, then he doesn't have any doubts about his testimony. And Hashem Taloi is only brought for somebody, Shelibo Nokfo, that he's guilty conscience. He has a guilty conscience and wants to protect himself until the issue is clarified. So in a situation where you're an outside party, and now you have two Edim saying he's dead, two Edim saying he's not dead, the person says, I don't know. So he feels guilty. He wants to make sure that he's covered until the time they figure it out. So he brings an Hashem Taloi to cover him. But over here, we have one, she marries one of the Edim. The Ed is basically going to say, I know he's dead. Nothing's bothered. I don't have a guilty conscience over here. I know he's dead, and therefore I'm not going to bring an Hashem Taloi. So that's what the Gemara says. She married one of her Edim. In the, we've seen before in the Masechta that you're not allowed to marry your Edim because in a sense it's nogeya b'davar. The Rishonim come up with situations or circumstances where it isn't nogeya b'davar. Either there's another set of Edim or the Ed was married at the time that he gave the testimony and therefore he was not nogeya b'davar. Or there is a suggestion that that's only a din l'chatchila. If they come and ask us, we're going to say don't get married. But if they already got married, we're not going to force them to get divorced. Gemara says, he gufa basham taloi kaima. Wait a minute. Okay, that works for the aid. What about her herself? There are two parties here in this relationship. So you're right with regards to the third party who's coming and having an intimate relationship with this woman. He would be chayav and asham taloi. So you say, oh, we saw that problem. He's saying it's one of the aidim that married her. Therefore, he has no doubts about the fact that this husband is dead. But what about the woman herself? The woman herself should have to bring an Hashem Taloi because she has no clue. She has two Edim saying yes, two Edim saying no. So Gemara says, Vomeret Barili. It's a case where she says, I'm certain that he passed away. Gemara says, Yehoche Maila Memra. Then in that case, why is there even a question? If she says, I'm certain that my husband's dead, then there's nothing else to ask over here. Why would you even think she should get divorced in that case? If she says, I'm certain my husband's dead, and I have two Edim supporting her, there's no reason not to believe her in that case. Afilu Rabbi Menachem ben Rabbi Yosef lo kamar. Even Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yosef, in that case, Elik Shebo Edim, he only says that it's a problem when the Edim came, v'achar kach niseit, and then she married afterwards. In the case where the Edim showed up, and then later on she gets married after knowing this knowledge, about knowing all the problems. Avon niseit v'achar kach bo Edim lo amar. There, Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yosef says that if it was a case where she first got married, and then the two Edim show up, then we don't say it. D'tanya, what's the case here? Shnayim omer it's mate. Shnayim omer it's lo mate. We have two Edim say that he passed away, two Edim say that he didn't pass away. Shnayim omrim nitgarsha, shnayim omrim lo nitgarsha. Two Edim say she's divorced, two Edim say she's not divorced. Harizeh lo tinase. She may not get married. Vim niseit, if she already got married, lo teitse. So l'chatchilo, you shouldn't get married in that case, because you have two versus two. And 32 verses 2 says, Safek, we're not going to let you get married. But if the person does get married, despite the fact that they know it's a Safek, or they didn't ask us and they went and got married, we're not going to force them to divorce. Basically what we say is, status quo. Whatever the status quo is now, it will remain that way. So if the status quo is that this woman is not married, and she is assumed to be the wife of this, either deceased or the person that divorced her, she will remain as that wife because we have a safek here. We're not going to say that she's free to go get married because of a safek. On the other hand, if she's already married, she already acted and she's married, then we're not going to tell her to get divorced now, because again, we're misafek. We don't have certainty. So we're going to leave whatever's in place and say that's the situation will remain in that way. If she's not married, she'll remain not married. If she is married, she'll remain married. But Menachem Rabbi Yossi Amar Tetzei. Menachem Rabbi Yossi says, divorce. She has to get divorced. Now that situation in the Braith is only a case where two Edim come and say he passed away. Two Edim came and say he didn't pass away. Then only then does she get married. In that case, Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi says, get divorced. She got married after she knew it was a safek. That's wrong. But in a case where two Edim show up and say he passed away and she got married, then two Edim show up and say he's not married, even Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi would agree that she doesn't have to get divorced in that case, because the whole safek arose only after the status quo was changed. And therefore she can remain in place. When she did it beheter. Since she did it beheter, that will leave that in place. It wasn't that she acted after it already was problematic. So then what is Rav's chiddush over here? What's Rav's chiddush? The fact that we say that when two Edim come, she doesn't have to get divorced. There's nobody who says otherwise. So why would you think otherwise? That's what Gemara says here. Ki kamar Rav nami bizman shebo Edim v'char kach niseit. Rav's statement was made in a case where both sets of Edim showed up and then she got married. Meaning that he's paskening like the Chachamim or the Tana Kama versus Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Yossi. And that's exactly what Rav's statement is coming to say. La fuke mi the Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Yossi. It's coming to say the locha is not like Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Yossi. Even in a case where both sets of Edim showed up first and she got married improperly. Nevertheless, once she's married, we're not going to force a divorce. And that's the position of the Tana Kama and the Braita that we brought. That's the position of the Chachamim. And Rav is saying the locha is like the Chachamim, even though Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Yossi is a dat yachid, his position makes a lot of sense. It's a svara. It's a logical thing to say that there's a difference between whether both sets of Edim came first or only one set of Edim came first. So despite the logic in his argument, Rav says the Loch is not like him. It's like the Tana Kama. That's what Rav was coming to teach us. Some say that Rav only says it in a case where the first two Edim came and said he's dead, and now she got married, and then the other two Edim came and said he's alive. In a case where both sets of Edim showed up beforehand and she got married, Tetzei. Come on, who's that like? Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Yossi. And then in that lashon, Rav is paskening like Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Yossi and saying the loch is like him. So in the first instance, he's paskening against Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Yossi, even though the svara makes a lot of sense. In the second case, because the svara makes a lot of sense, he's paskening like Rabbi Menachem and Rabbi Yossi, despite the fact that the Chachamim argue, because it makes a lot of sense that only if she married before the Edim came and questioned the death of her husband, then she remains married. But if she married after that question already arose, that was an improper marriage, and we're going to force her to divorce because she shouldn't have gotten married at that point in time. Meitiv Rava. Rava asks, quite challenges this, and says, Minayin, he brings a brayta, Minayin shem lo ratzo dafno. How do we know that if he doesn't agree, that we force him? Tamalomar v'kidashto bi'al korcho. Kidashto is a pasuk found again in Parshat Emor. It's the demand on the Kohanim that they be kadoshim. So not only is a Kohen kadosh, but he has to act in a kadosh manner. And therefore what is being suggested over here is that if he doesn't act in a kadosh manner, we're going to enforce it. We are going to push that he acts in a kadosh manner. Hey chidami, what's the case over there? Ilema, and again this is in the context of what we're speaking about over here, which is a case where she got married. If it's a case where she didn't marry one of her Edim, velo kamra barili, and she doesn't say, I'm certain that my husband passed away, tzricha lemeimar de dafno, over there you have to say that we're going to force the husband, this Kohen, to divorce her. Again, this Kohen is marrying a woman who's now the second husband. The second husband's a Kohen, and now he marries her. There's a potential that this woman is a zona. Because if she was really married, and now he is together with her. He's living together with a zona. So why would you even have a question that they should get divorced over here in a situation in which she didn't marry one of her Edim and a situation where she's not certain about the testimony of the first in the group that said that he's passed away? Isn't it a case where she married one of Edim? Vikamra barili, and she's saying, I'm certain that my husband passed away. Biktani doth know. And we still say that we force a divorce in that case. So you see that we do force a divorce in a case where all these items are true, and nevertheless we do force a divorce. That's a question on Rav's position over here. It's basically like Rabbi Nachum Rabbi Yossi, that we don't force a divorce in these situations. Over here it's pretty clear that we are forcing a divorce in that situation. Alma mafkinin la minei. So we show that we do force this woman to divorce. It says, Isir kuhuna shaini. Over there, there's a double problem. There's a singular problem, which is maybe she was still married, and is the testimony of the Zedim fine. That we overcome by her, first of all, marrying in one of her Edim, and her saying Bari Li, that I'm certain that this is the case. But a Kohen adds on an additional dimension over here, which is that if she was married, she's now a Zonah, and if she's a Zonah, he can't stay with her because it's a Kohen with a Zonah. So Kohen has an additional restriction being together with this woman that won't be overcome by him saying Bari Li or marrying one of the Edim. So therefore, Kuna, because of the Milot of Kuna, we force them to divorce. It's not a general principle that we force a divorce in these cases. It's just because of Kuna that we do it. Vibaitema, my Dafno. What does it mean over here that we force? Dafno Beidim. That we force her through the Edim, which is Beitin is under an obligation to find a Edim that will testify on behalf of this woman or against this woman. If people come in and say that the husband passed away, Beit Din is then obligated to look into the issue and not just believe these Edim. They have to then go out and find other Edim to either corroborate the story or to undermine the story. But they have to do an investigation. They can't just say, Mutaret, we have two Edim, everything's fine. No, they have to investigate the situation. Dafno here means not that we force him, literally, physically force him to divorce her, but force him with Edim. We look for Edim to figure out which side is correct over here. Vibaitemek shibau Edim v'chakach niseit. It's a case where Edim came, and then she got married. Menachem Rabbi Yossi, this braita that has been quoted by Rova, is a case where both sets of Edim showed up first. One Edim said he's passed away, the other Edim said he didn't pass away, and then she got married anyway. So, what's the problem there? Menachem Rabbi Yossi says she got married, in that case she has to get divorced. And that he's the author of this braita. So don't question Rav from this, because either this upholds the second Lashon of Rav, which is that he's passing like Menachem Rabbi Yossi, or he holds like the first Lashon, where he's passing against Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi. And this Breita is like Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi. So it's not a question on Rav, because the Breita is following the position of Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi, and Rav passes against him in the first Lashon. So that's not a question on Rav, it's two different Tanaim, and Rav passes like the other Tana. Ravashi Amar might lotate say, so now Ravashi gives a different answer for Rav. Why does Rav say when there are two Edim over here that you don't have to get divorced? My lotate to Kamar, Rav, lotate mehetera Rishon. She doesn't leave her first hetera, meaning that she goes back to her original husband. Until now we assume lo teitzei means she doesn't have to divorce the second husband she married over here. But the husband's here. Rav Ashi in the turn says, no, what does it mean lo teitzei? Means it's not like our Mishnah. And our Mishnah where there's a problem, we say divorce both sides, you have to get rid of everybody, she loses everything in that case. Over here what Rav says is that we don't lose everything in this case, because that case in the Mishnah is a case where it's an Eid Echad. Over here, she married based on two Edim. So if she married based on two Edim, there was no reason she shouldn't have gotten married. She relied on a judicial process that was vetted. And in that case, if her husband comes back, she's an Anusa. She was a total Anus. And again, it was against her will. It wasn't something that she entered willingly. She did it because she had all this information and procedures of Beit Din work accomplished. So because she's an Anusa, she's allowed to return to her original husband. She's not assumed to have had a willing extramarital affair. It's as if she was an Anusa, and therefore she can go back to Heter Rishon, and she can return to her original husband. But it says, Ha'amra Rav Chada Zimna. Rav already said this explicitly, Titznan. Nisayt Shelo Brishut Muteret Lachzorlo. If she got married without permission, this is at the end of our Mishnah, she can go back to her original husband. Gemara says, Rav Rav, Hunam Rav, Hachi Yochata. That's the halacha. And as we established before, is what does it mean, Shelo Brishut? It means Shelo Brishut Beitin, but rather Brishut Edim. Two Edim showed up, and she got married. In that case, she's allowed to go back to her original husband. And Rav says on that, that's the halacha. So if Rav already told us that's the halacha, why is he coming again to tell us the same thing, that the halacha is in a case where she relied on proper edim, she's allowed to return to the first husband. Rav says, Chada michlal chaver ta'idmar. You're right. He said one of them, and the other one was an inference from the statement. So either he said, halacha is like the Mishnah, and then the Gemara inferred from that, that if two edim show up versus one, that she doesn't have to get divorced, or the other way. The other way is that he made the statement that it's Voshan Uel Be'er Echad. That's only true by Be'er Echad. By Shnei Edim, that's not true. And from that, we realize that Rav thinks the halacha is that when two Edim show up, she's not penalized. She's allowed to return to her original husband. Amar Shmuel. So now you have Shmuel arguing on Rav. It says, Lo Shano Ela Shalo Machashto. That's only true where there's no disagreement or denial of what they are saying. But in a case where she denies it, then lo teitze. Gemara says, "Mamaya skinan." What's the case here? Ilam ebeitrei. If you have two edim coming up and showing up and saying this is your husband, ki machashta ale mayavi. If she says that's not my husband, we don't listen to her. You have two edim and her, we don't listen to her. Ela bechad with one ed. Time of the machashto. That is only because she says it's not her husband. Hashatko teitze. If she's silent, then she has to get divorced. Anytime that the Torah believes an Eid Echad, that Eid Echad is functioning like two Eidim. So if two Eidim show up, there's no question that we're not going to believe her when she says, that's not my husband. When these two Eidim show up and say, this is your husband, so therefore she would have to get divorced. So what are you saying? It's a case where an Eid Echad showed up now and says, that this is your husband, and she denies it. So she says, no, that's not my husband. Mara is more bothered by the fact that if she was silent and the Eid Echad shows up and says, this is your husband, she would have to get divorced. The reason is because the Eid Echad is Neman. He's believed over here. And we have a principle from Ula that once an Eid Echad is Neman, he's Neman Kibet Rei. He has the weight of two Eidim. If that's the case, when she denies it or she disagrees with that Eid Echad, why does it carry any weight? The Eid Echad is like two. She is like a woman arguing on two Eidim. Or anybody arguing on two Eidim, it carries no weight. Just like when you're literally two Eidim, it doesn't carry weight. When there's an Eid Echad that is like two Eidim, it's not going to carry weight over here. Or even if an Eid Echad now shows up and says that her husband's alive, he will have no weight versus this Eid Echad that we already believed, Kishne Eidim. And so therefore, in the case where she's silent, and we have an Eid Echad who came originally and said that she was muteret to marry because her husband had passed away, he was Neman Kishne Eidim. Then when this Eid Echad shows up and she says nothing, that Eid Echad should carry no weight versus the original Eid who is determined to be like two. So then why does Shmuel say, Aval machashto lo teitze? Even if she's silent, lo teitze, because the first Eid carries so much weight. Now the Ritva says here that the principle of Ula is only applicable by Arayot. Because in a normal case of Eid Echad Neman B'Yisurin, the Eid Echad is Neman because he's functioning like an Eid Echad. That's all we need. But in the case of Erva, where you really need two, and we believed in Eid Echad, that's where we empower the Eid Echad to be like Shnei Eidim. But in normal cases, he will remain an Eid Echad. And that goes back to what we said earlier about the difference in the nature of Eidut when it comes to Eid Echad Neman B'Yisurin versus normal Eidut. Or in cases where we accept Eidim Psulim, again, it's functioning more like Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Yisurim and not like the regular Eidut or testimony. And here it's either only coming to be Mivareret Amilta to clarify for us some of the facts, or according to the Kovetz HaAroth and Rav Chaim to establish what the Psak Halacha is in this case, but not to change the facts. It says, Hocha B'Maiskinan B'Psulei Eidut. The Eid Echad that showed up was not a kosher aid, but it was someone who was otherwise disqualified from being an aid. Ukid Rabbi Nechemia, like the position of Rabbi Nechemia, Tanya Rabbi Nechemia Omer, Kol Makom Shemina Torah Eid Echad. Anytime the Torah believes in Eid Echad, not literally in Eid Echad, but believes in Eid Echad, that we're not working under the principles of Eidut, but rather under the principles of Giloy Milta, that they're coming here to reveal us or give us some information. And even Psule Eidut are allowed to testify over here, like an Isha, like a Katan, like Eid Mipi Eid, all of these which are normally disqualified in Eidut, will be permitted in this situation. So what Rabbi Nechemia says is, when you're functioning under that rule of not regular Eidut, but Eid Echad being a code word for Nemanut, then the rules are a little different, which is, Kol Makom Shemina Torah Eid Echad, Haleich Achar Rov Deyot. Over there, we go by the Rov. Basu, shtei nashim b'ish echad, k'shtei nashim b'ish echad. And therefore, they make it, if you have two women versus a man, the equivalent of two men versus a man. In that, it becomes down here no longer about Eidut and establishing testimony, but rather, it's a question of numbers. We have a safek here, and we have a principle that when you have a safek, hochim achar rov, you go after the Rov. And that's the same thing over here. If the Eid Echad is Neman is not functioning under the rules of testimony, but rather under the rules of Giloy Milta or Beirur Milta, that they're clarifying for us some information or some factual information, then again, if you have a Safek, what's going to determine when we want to know what the facts are? Rov will determine. So here it'll be, even if you have one aid, and he's coming and testifying, it's not like he has real aid duty and he becomes like two aidim. He remains one aid, he's one, and the woman is one. So now you have one versus one, that's a safek, and she can remain married if she's already married. She doesn't have to divorce. And the same will be true if one woman shows up and says that he passed away, and then two women show up and say he didn't pass away. Those two women will trump the first woman because, again, it's all about birur milta, and we go after the rove. As Rashi explains over here, if she says, I'm certain that it's not him, we throw out the first aid, because psulei edut cannot take away the kashrut of adam, afilu ein elef, even if there are 1,000 of them, shekoach adam neman al atzmo, b'isurin. Every person is believed about themselves with regards to isurin, but davar barulo. If it's certain to you, then edim can't change that fact. Elim kain, yesh edut kshira, unless you have real edim over here. Once you have real edim, then we can change the status, we can tell you that you're wrong. But without real edim, you have psulei edut, they can't change the fact that barili, that I'm certain that this is an isur, or I'm allowed to do this. Hilka command let nehu domates as if they don't exist. Mechazakat ishid ish yatzdala al pi arishon. And therefore she leaves the status of ishid ish based on the testimony of the first ones because it's bari to her. And says it's bari to her, that's what's going to trump over here when she says bari li. In a case where she doesn't answer and she shoteket, then Rov David Oat will be koveya. The majority will be koveya where she doesn't deny it. But in a case where she denies it, then the psulei edut have no weight against her, and therefore the only thing we're looking at is an aid that supports her position, and that's why she will be allowed to remain married and not have to get divorced in that case.
Some say
that when an eid echad kasher comes to start the process, then even 100 women are the equivalent of one aid, because that one aid gets elevated to the status of two aidim. Like Ula said before, when one aid comes to testify and is accepted like an aid, he becomes the equivalent of two. So again, the Gemara is using a melitza here to say that even 100 women will not be considered more than one against him, because he's equivalent of two aidim, because he has the power of two aidim now. And unless two aidim come and undermine that, and then he needs two aidim or hazamat to change the fact that his aidut carries the weight of two aidim. So again, if he speaks up first, if he's the eid echa that we're relying on, then he is believed like two aidim. And therefore, against his testimony that she's mutaret because her husband passed away, even if you have one aid that shows up, or you have 100 psulei aidut show up, none of those can undermine the original aidut that he brought, because that carries the weight of two. And therefore, if he was the one who testified that the husband had passed away, we will rely on that to establish the fact that she's allowed to marry, and anybody who comes afterwards will not be able to undermine him if it's an eid echad or if it is multiple eidim that are psulim. So therefore, if the first fact was established by an eid echad, then he has a weight like Beit Shrei. But if the original fact was established by an isha psula, then we are now working under the rubric of Rabbi Nechemia, which is that Rov Deyot govern. So if the original aid was an aid psula, and now we have another aid psula going up against it, that becomes one against one. Or if the original aid was just one aid saying that her husband passed away, now you have two aidim psulim saying that her husband passed away, then they will govern here because we're going after Rov Deyot. So in the first Lashon, we consider the Eid Echad to be an Eid Pasul, and therefore he didn't garner the position of being like Shtei Eidim, and he was thrown into the pot of Rabbi Nechemia, which is Rov Deyot. According to the second Lashon, Eid Echad that comes first has a status of Shtei Eidim, and therefore if one Eid or Psulim show up afterwards, they have no weight against him. But if the original Sak came from the fact that we said her husband passed away and she married based on an aid pasul, then the residual aidut will be measured under the rule of Rabbi Nechemia that will go after Rov Deyot. And then based on what Shmuel said before, in our case here, where the original aid was a woman who said that she is mutaret to go and marry, then two women show up and say that her husband is still alive, she can join, if she denies that, and she joins with the original woman who says that her husband has passed away, then it becomes like two against two, and she can remain married. Other than if she remains silent over here, Then we have one aide, the original aide, who was a woman who said that her husband passed away. And now we have two aidim, two women saying that he has not passed away. And we go after Rov Deot, and she would have to divorce her husband when she is silent. If you explain it this way, then how do you explain the words of Rav Nechemiah? Nechemiah Omer, Kol Makom She'emina Torah Eid Echad, Halei Chachar Rov Deot, Vasu Shtei Nashim B'Isha Achat, Kishnei Anashim B'Isha Echad. So that is, specifically, this is how I'm going to understand Rabbi Yirmiyah. In the case where it's two women versus one woman, that's like two versus one. And like when you have two men versus an Ish Echad, over there again, the two carry the day, because they're two Eidim versus one, or by the Isha, it's two women versus one woman. Aval Shtei Nashim B'Isha Echad, if you have two women versus an Ish Echad, an Eid Echad, that is a man, Kepalga Upalga Damyo. It's like half and half. So as Rashi explains over here, it's Eid Machish Eid. And therefore now we're going to rely on the principle of Ula, which is that since she got married, Kedu Ula, the Rishon Neman Kishnaim, Vanakulu Keid Echad. The first one's believed like two Eidim, and all the latter are like one Eid. And so because of that, it's as if we believe the first aid and it carries weight. That means if she's already married, she doesn't have to get divorced. And seemingly, even if she wasn't married yet, she could get married based on that testimony because that carries the day, it has full weight. On the other hand, the Rambam views it as being an aidet mucheshet, which means that we have a safek, which is the status quo remains then. That if she was already married, she stays married. If she has yet to get married, then she cannot marry based on this eidut because we have an Eidut Mucheshet now. So Rashi views the conclusion of the Gemara is that Eid Echad now gets a weight like two, and therefore it's a real Eidut in the sense, and then Shtei Nashim can't come and undermine that. Whereas, according to the Rambam, that an Eid Echad is Neman like two means like two Deot. And since it's like two Deot, and you have two women against that, it becomes an Eidut Mucheshet literally. And since it's an Eidut Mucheshet, therefore it's a Safek. Tzricha get mizeh mizeh. Bishlama rishon tibai get. From the first husband she needs a get because she's married to him midoraita. Ela misheni amai. Why does she need a get from the second husband? Znut ba'almohu. It was an extramarital affair. You don't need a get from znut. So Rav Huna gzeira shema yomru gireish zev nasazeh. We're afraid that people are going to think that she divorced her first husband and then married the second husband and it was a real marriage. And you're going to think that a woman can be released without a bill of divorce. Yochi Seifa Diktani, the upcoming Mishnah that says in it, Amrula made Balich. They say to her, your husband passed away. Vinitkadsha, and she has Kiddushim. V'achar kach Babala, and then her husband shows up. Mutaret Lachzorlo, she can go back to her husband. This is in a case of Kiddushin as opposed to Nisuin, which is the case of our Mishnah. Why don't we make the same statement over here and say that she divorced her original husband and now she's married to this second guy and she needs a divorce for him. And then people are going to think that she can get divorced or without a get. So Gemara says, olam by a get. So that's, no, you're right. In that case of the Mishnah upcoming, she also requires a get in that case. But if that's the case that she needs a get from the second guy, it looks like you're allowed to take your grusha back. Because the first individual, people are going to think that the first guy divorced her. She married the second guy, got divorced from him, and now she's going back to her original husband. So that's the case of Makzir Grusha To. So why are we going to allow that appearance, which is problematic, to go through? Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi ben Kiper. That's like Rabbi Yossi ben Kiper we saw earlier in the Masechta, Daf Yud Aleph, Da'amar, Mina Nisuim, Asura. The Yisur Machzir Grushato only applies where, if after her divorce, she gets married and consummates that marriage with another party, then she's not allowed to return to her original husband. But if she only had Erusim with the other party and then got divorced, she's allowed to return to her husband. So Rabbi Yossi ben Kiper will be the author of our Mishnah. And that's why there's no problem. There was only Kiddushin over here. Since there was only Kiddushin, there isn't a problem with Machzir Grushato, and nothing bad or untoward will come from this if people think she really divorced the first husband, married the second husband, now going back to the first husband because she only had Erusin with the second husband. Where it says, V'amiktani seifa afal pish natan la acharon get lo pasla minekuna. Again, the upcoming Mishnah says, even if the second guy gives her a get, she's not psula minekuna, mechlau de lo bay a get. The reason she's not pasla de kuna is because she really didn't need a get. So the get that he gave her was completely unnecessary. And since it was completely unnecessary, it's not called a get. Because for kahuna, even reyach haget Even like a slightest smell of a get makes her psula de kuhuna. So unless you believe this get is totally invalid, there's no way that we're going to let her marry a kohen. So that must mean that over there it's clear that Deidash doesn't need a get. Ela seifa amre kedushei tau tabu. Gemara says in the seifa they're going to say that it was a kedushin by mistake. And that's why she went out without a get. When it says Reishanami Amri Nisuei Tavu Tavu, why don't you say in the first case in our Mishnah also that it was Nisuei Tavu, that they had a condition, and that the Nisuin did not go through. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that if we allow her to leave the second husband without a get, nobody's going to suspect that this woman is being freed without a get, because they're just going to assume that she had some sort of condition embedded in the Kiddushin, and that condition wasn't fulfilled, and that's why she's no longer married to this individual. Rashi gives examples of that, which is, Kagon, Amanach Ani Kohen, Benimtsa Yisrael. If he says that I'm a Kohen, and turns out he's really Yisrael, the condition wasn't met, therefore the Kiddushin dissolved without any need for a get. Tosafot doesn't like Rashi's explanation over here, because then the Gemara asks, what about Nisuin? And the Gemara tells us in other places that once she reached the point of Nisuin and there was a condition built into Nisuin, if she goes through with the consummation of the marriage, even if later on it's found to be that the Tanai, that the condition was not met, we assume that consummation of the marriage is Mechila on all conditions. Because in Kiddushin you can have a Tanai because that's really like a transaction. And so when there's a transaction, you can build in a condition in the transaction. On the other hand, when you're talking about Nisuin, consummation of a marriage, intimacy between two individuals, at that point, it must be that they're mochel on all Tanaim, because otherwise they wouldn't enter into a intimate relationship unless all things were solved before that point in time. So we assume there's mechila on Tanaim. So therefore, Tosfot says the Tanai here can't be a Tanai like a regular condition in the Kedushin, because then how do you compare it to Nisuin? Ela Omeri, the Kedushay Tao, Tainu Shesavrua Shemait Bala, Velo Mate, Kamoshu Amet. That the reason she got married is because she premised that marriage on the fact that her husband passed away. And now that she found out that her husband did pass away, the Kiddushin are betoth. That's what people are going to think. So then the Gemara asks about that. What about Nisuin? Nisuin should have the same status. She only got married and consummated that marriage because she thought her husband passed away. Now that we found out that her husband didn't pass away, there's nothing to discuss. Gemara says, Kansur Rabbanon. The Rabbanon find her in the case of Nisuin. So Gemara says, Same Seif and Namad Kansua. Why don't they also fine or penalize her in the case of the Sefer where it's Kiddushin? So Gemara says, yep, there's a difference. Reisha da Abdo Yisura Kansua. In the Reisha where her marriage resulted in her doing something wrong, there they penalized her. There she had Kiddushin, and then she consummated the marriage, had Nisuin, that Biyaz, a Biyav Yisur. Even though, again, it wasn't her fault necessarily because she didn't know, but because of that situation where she didn't check it out, it's only an Eid Echad, she's penalized, and therefore she has to divorce in that situation. But in the Seifa case, where she only engaged in Kiddushin, Erusin, which are a halachic engagement, but she never consummated that marriage, over there, even though the Kiddushin were wrong, but she didn't actually do an Aveira, she never had intimacy with this individual, she never consummated the marriage. Since she didn't do an Aveira, Seifa de la de Yisura lo Kansur Rabbanan. In that case, the Rabbanan did not penalize her because even though she started down a path of problem, she never actually got into the problem because it was resolved before she ever consummated the marriage. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Pei Tet Amud Aleph.